play is where it presents itself, is an opportunity for kids to learn to fail. And that's where my students, they've never been taught, and this is a K-12 thing, that failing is okay. Mm-hmm. They just want to be told how to do it and do it right and get it done. And so, so I try to model failing. I try to talk through those opportunities.
Okay, now we're recording.
So welcome to Teach Wonder. Yes, welcome to Teach Wonder, a podcast hosted by Ashley O'Neill and Julie Cunningham.
Welcome back to Teach Wonder. Our last episode was a pretty deep dive into play. This is a two-part episode, so if you haven't listened to episode one, pause this and jump back into your podcast app and look for the episode called Learning Through Play. You can also find it linked in our show notes. Once you're done, join us back here. Okay, our last episode was a pretty deep dive into play. We talked about a newish course with undergrads here at CMU that focuses on play's role in the classroom. We talked about the tenets of play, we defined play, and we talked about how teachers could and should be using it as a valuable tool in their work. This week, we're back with Dr. Tracy Donahue and talking more about the mechanics that makes this specific class work so well and the specific skills that are so well taught and practiced through play. We're returning to our interview with Tracy at a moment when she's talking about how this course came to be. While I had some valuable tools in my undergrad work, much of this class feels different and brand new. So, who's getting the chance to do this work, and what exactly does that look like?
Knowing the politics behind creating the course and getting it through curriculum, I have learned that there's so much that has gone into all of any course or any curriculum. Yes. Here at the university, but I did look up, and the majors that are included in all of these would be a Bachelor of Science with Education. So they're going to get a certification, pre-K through third, birth through kindergarten and early childhood special ed, pre-K through sixth, birth through third and early childhood special ed. And then also we have the early childhood development and learning, which is also a degree with a BA, BAA and BS. So we actually now have, and so
quite a few.
So I think because of this new banding and the new programming is why the class is growing. Okay. I would like to take ownership from that, but I think it is because it's growing.
Some credit as well.
Yes. I do see, I have almost 40 students right now. I have 39, but I looked next semester, it's been capped at 30, which makes it feel a little bit, I love actually my whole group. And I love when I see almost 40 people in that room, but it does feel like a lot to play with.
And it's harder to play in a lecture hall, right? Like when you have bigger, it just isn't as conducive to.
Yeah. Even down to, we did, what did I do yesterday? Well, I did a read aloud of a circle story, like Laura Numeroff, and I had them come up and put the little pieces on. Just even to read aloud to a large group of adults is hard, mm-hmm. because you want to show them the pictures.
Right.
And then I did one of those mystery boxes you've seen. Mm-hmm. So I had a student come up, but then not everyone can see, you know, what's mm-hmm. going on. So
Yeah, that's good. I have to say, when your students were in the makerspace, I was so delighted that they, I mean, like before they even had their coats off, before they even had barely said hello, right? They were involved getting their hands on
that
things.
Group.
It was fabulous, right? So it often doesn't, we work with adults on a fairly regular basis and educators on a regular basis, and it doesn't always happen that way. So there was delightful.
That group in itself was special because I always said, okay, I have a fishbowl, who's ready? And I would always have a teacher. My group now, I have people that want to be the children, but nobody yet has volunteered to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's not true. After I modeled, I had somebody that would do it. So I'm doing more of the heavy lifting. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping they'll take that over. So I don't know what it's going to be like this semester when we visit, but
there's more of a risk involved, right?
There's more of a risk.
Right,
yeah. And we take ourselves seriously. And we don't, this is a note, and I don't know if this will come up, but when you were saying, you know, what is a definition of play? I had jotted some notes just in me thinking, obviously, the things I mentioned earlier are like problem solving and social interaction. But one big thing I wrote here that is really important, not just in my play class and all my classes, but I think play is where it presents itself, is an opportunity for kids to learn to fail. And that's where my students, they've never been taught, and this is a K-12 thing, that failing is okay. Mm-hmm. They just want to be told how to do it and do it right and get it done. And so, so I try to model failing. I try to talk through those opportunities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that gets back to that iteration piece, yes, again, right? If you're always successful, there might not be a whole lot of reason to iterate.
And if we laugh at ourselves too, if we fail, like that's okay too, right. You know?
Yeah. I work lately. I've been working with old teachers who work with older students. So mm-hmm. fourth grade and up.
Okay.
Maybe like fourth through ninth is that band that I've been working with. And I hear or feel maybe there's a vulnerability in being playful and incorporating play into learning. And I hear that with maybe some of your students where yes. being the teacher and kind of you're the director of play or you're the initiator of play. And I wonder a little bit how do you think a teacher could get through that, right? Like, does it just happen by taking it one step at a time and just practicing makes it more comfortable? Or what does that look like for a teacher who's like, okay, I hear what you're saying. I get it from like the intellectual level, but doing it in my classroom makes me feel weird.
Totally. And I think some of us, I'd love to be able to say, well, it just comes naturally to some people. And I'm thankful that I can make myself be vulnerable more easily than I think some people can. I think it is taking risks. If I think back to being a third grade teacher, my students, in North Carolina, we did not have duty-free recess or lunch. So I was with those kids and I did not play with them all the time, but they sure did love it when I did play with them. And I remember this kid, Byron, he was my first or second class. He's like, you can't do a cartwheel. I was like, of course I can do a cartwheel. And I did one. I was sore for 2 weeks from doing a cartwheel because I hadn't done one in so long. His mom told me I remember because I worked with her actually. She was like, he loves when you play with them. And just putting myself out there, if it's hard or easy, just for a few minutes. I remember playing Uno with them at indoor recess and they loved to make me draw four. And seeing them for who they're and be like, I know Daniel's going to make me draw four again. Really like, and he was such a quiet kid, but like really valuing that he's there even in a joking situation and building those relationships mm-hmm. is so valuable. And so I think it's more of just stopping and taking a risk, even if it's hard. You're going to get so much more mileage out of that. Mm-hmm. I think of being home with when my big kids were little, and I used to be like, you know, like in the summers, I'd be like, you know, being a stay-at-home mom, I don't really spend more time with them because we're always going here, doing this chores and all this stuff. And then I realized if I just spend 10 minutes playing hide and go seek with them, they're like so happy and content. And then they just go on and like do their thing. So mm-hmm. I think it's just putting in some effort, even when it's hard.
And I like what you say too. Like it doesn't have to be all the time or long. It can be these brief playful interactions or these brief moments that give you a chance to like get out uncomfortable for a minute. And then it doesn't have to be you all day.
So this is, I'm going to take us in a place that is tragic, but when the Michigan State shooting happened a couple weeks ago, I went to state. So obviously I'm impacted. I have friends that work there. I know my students all have connections to somebody there in some way. And so I was like, what do I do? I'm not just going to go in class and have a class. I can't do that. And so I was like, here is the deal. You know, I invite you to attend, but I also invite you to self-care if you need to take care of yourself that next day. When we're in class, we can play games and we can not talk about things or we can talk about things. I'm going to give you a bunch of options. And so then we got together and I brought like every board game that wasn't like trashed in my house. I brought, so I had like two cartfuls of board games and probably a third of each of my classes came. And I was so happy to see them. So I had about 13 people in play class. And I was like, well, do you want to talk about things? They're like, we'll play and talk about it. I was like, okay. And so we played Hues and Cues. And if y'all haven't played that, it is so fun. I think you can play up to 10 people, but we did teams. And we ended up like being able to talk through it. And so I think sometimes also if you're someone that has a hard time just sitting down going, let's play with this. And like, I don't want to do voices. I feel silly. A board game or something structured can lend itself to you building those relationships in the same way.
That's a good point. I think something you said earlier comes back to that point as well. You mentioned earlier taking your cues from kids, which I hear you sort of say now as well, right? So yeah. If you can take your cues from that Uno game that they're playing or the cartwheels that they're doing on the playground and sort of join in, I think I've made this clear on the podcast before that I was a secondary instructor, but I work volunteering in the summer with kids on mountain bikes. And last summer I had 5- and 6-year-olds, which is everybody who knows me said, you're taking a group of 5- and 6-year-olds. You know
Didn't
what? It was so perfect that like I needed that as much as they needed the leaders out mountain biking, mm-hmm. as much as they needed it for learning to bike, right? Mm-hmm. I needed those 2 hours of my week to be nowhere else except present for those 5- and 6-year-olds. Like that was my best. It doesn't matter what happened at work. Doesn't matter what happened at home. Doesn't matter what I've got going on in the rest of my life, but just being present mm-hmm. and giggling about, not getting very far before we need our snack or taking the time to roll in the dirt down the hill because we're not riding the hill or whatever it was, right? Just being absolutely silly.
Yeah.
Was just exactly I needed as an adult.
Yes. and that's why I take their lead.
Taking their lead, yeah. Right? Just so I think like, and I'm probably the last one to be giving advice on how to play. But that really resonated with me when you said that earlier about like taking the cues from the kids.
Yeah, and I think for me, I know you talked a lot about incorporating into your content. And if you wanted to give any specific examples that you had ready that we hadn't talked about, you're welcome to. But I also think about it a lot in terms of, I don't like the word classroom management. That's my least favorite word. But okay. I think about it in terms of, I think about my 4-year-old son, getting him out the door is hard in the morning. And it's mm-hmm. going to be hard whether I go, we're doing this and then this and you're going in, right? And I have a lot of structure and I just directly tell him what he's going to do. Or it's going to be hard if I put on a bit of silliness and we mm-hmm. make it a game to get out the door, or I make silly noises every time he puts a shoe on, right? Like it's just choosing what's maybe tricky. And so both are work, but maybe the playful one is more meaningful and better building relationships, like you said, mm-hmm. results in a better outcome and everybody's regulation, right? We leave the house in a better place. And I think if you think about in the classroom, if you have a difficult moment or a student in a transition that's going to be tricky, you could make it tricky by, this is what we're doing this mm-hmm. now, I'm going to do this power dynamics play with you, mm-hmm. or you could approach it with a bit of playfulness instead.
I mean, there's a reason they've had play therapy for ages. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it's just taking our lead and like going back to like, kids have it right. We're the ones that have it wrong.
Because this might feel novel or different for mm-hmm. some of our listeners, mm-hmm. the more examples might help give them a more nuanced understanding of what we're
okay.
talking about.
So, back to our folks that don't necessarily, it's going back to that definition of play. And this might inform my practice next semester to really step back and define play for longer. Because I can talk, I can preach, I can model all these things. And I swear to you, someone will still go, how about flashcards for my literacy activity? I swear. And I go, well, what are you going to do with those flashcards? Because they can be engaging. And I'm not saying they're a bad tool, because I don't want to shame anyone that buys flashcards. Right. It's the same thing with like time multiplication tests. I loved those things when I was little, but they're not helpful for some kids, whatever. And so if you think about the intent behind flashcards, okay, fine. But what can you do that is more authentic, more playful? Some kids thrive on going, let me beat the timer, let me do this. But they might actually enjoy it more if I'm pointing out letters in a book that I'm reading. And so I need to model more of what is play, even though I feel like I model it all the time. But have them kind of think about play doesn't have to be what you did as a child either. And so some things we did in class, like I told you, we did a read aloud yesterday. There's so many beautiful things on teachers pay teachers And I'm happy for them to use it. But I said, just because it's cute doesn't mean it's good. And so that's where we go back to and go like high quality math tasks. Where are these characteristics or attributes in this task? Mm-hmm. Just because it's colorful doesn't mean it's nice. But also colorful can be nice or engaging and thoughtful mm-hmm. sure. work. And so I think it's more of just like helping them develop some criticality around things they find online is something that I do.
The criticality is something I think we can all take note from. Now, I'm no stranger to particularly famous and well-used sites of teacher resources run by teachers for teachers. And I'm confident that having your teaching best friend drop off a stack of freshly laminated stations without you even having to ask for it is still one of my primary love languages. But considering the content with that eye of expertise, I'm not sure that that was always the first thing on my mind. And I really love that Tracy considers this practical resource that teachers are using and has students use their lens of expertise to reconsider and refine them. This conversation also gets at the question Tracy is asked often. Now, are you teaching explicitly how to play, playing through teaching through playing? Her answer here is fantastic.
I'm really trying to focus more on the unstructured play and guiding the learning. I said, so where I see kind of a divide-ish is people say like, it's this either or child-centered, we follow the child's lead, or teacher-directed. And I'm here to argue, no, you need both, because I can follow Julie around all day long, but the learning just doesn't it doesn't just pour in. Mm-hmm. I'm there to guide it. And I said, you need to be familiar with the things that child should know. And again, I don't like to put five-year-olds in a five-year-old box and say, these are only for five-year-olds, but I want you to be familiar with most five-year-olds should be able to do these. But also look at six-year-olds, because if they can do these, maybe they could do these things. Or maybe they're not there yet, and we need to look back at what four-year-olds can do. Mm-hmm. So be familiar with those standards. So then have those in the back of your mind. And go up and say, you know, I notice you're playing restaurant. Could we make a sign for your restaurant and do some interactive writing and have you help me make some print and add print in that environment? I'm not disrupting your play. I'm not driving your play, but I am pushing and advancing your learning.
And if that child was like, no, I want to make a menu, you'd be like, great.
Let's do that. Make a menu. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I'm following their lead, but it's like, do you want to put your shoes on or do you want me to put your shoes on? But either way, you're going to put your shoes on. And it's not that we don't want kids to know they're learning. Like I see a lot of parents go, it was so fun. They didn't even know they were learning. Mm-hmm. It's not like sneaking vegetables into something. It's okay to be like, that was learning and that was fun. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Or to even say, we had fun. Let's talk about all the things we learned. And then something I did yesterday. So we were online one day and I said, choose your own adventure. And I gave them different scenarios. So like just context, playground, sandbox, using an iPad. So it's a child playing. And what did I can't remember what I think maybe I had them choose a literacy skill, I think is what I did. And they had to create a faux thick conversation around that. And so then I noticed that some of them are still writing, oh, I see. Ashley, you're playing with tiles. Can you tell me what that color is? Oh, can you tell me a word that rhymes with that? Oh, that's great. Thank you. And so then I have them go back. I said, okay, now you're going to critique your own work. Mm-hmm. Did you advance your child's learning? And every time you're not going to do all these things, did you advance their learning? Did you assess their learning? Did you find out something they know? Or did you introduce some new like vocabulary? You know, so we, mm-hmm. so then I said, okay, if you can improve any of those things, what would it be? And so they had to like look at their mm-hmm. script. When I did have the students model, so they didn't want to do a fishbowl in front of the whole class. So I modeled and then I said, okay, now I have tubs around the room. Y'all are going to go do your own fishbowls. So I had like one was a parachute. So they took it out in the hall and they're like, how are we doing literacy with a parachute? And I was like, well, let's talk about that. Let's think about that. But anyway, there was this one and they had a balance and one Cassidy was modeling being a teacher And it was the same weight was on each side. And so she said, so she was trying to elicit some conversation with this child. And she was like, okay, I noticed that you actually have it going in a straight line. What would you call that? And I'm not doing the conversation justice. And the student was like, flat. She's like, you know what? That is right. And actually I use the word called balance when I do that. And I didn't ask her to do that and do anything, but it was like a perfect, everyone stop. I just want to tell you what happened right here in just advancing their vocabulary there. Mm-hmm. So.
Right. And not saying you're right or wrong. In fact, you are right. It's flat.
It is flat. Also, and we say balance. Yeah. And so we talk about ways to do that. And then also like sometimes I'll have them play and I'll just write words on the board that I hear them using. Mm-hmm. And I say, look at all these vocabulary words I hear. And then that doesn't mean Ashley's going to be ready to use that word, but then maybe next time we do this, that word might enter your mm-hmm. expressive vocabulary.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, I hear a lot of reflecting back with students. So letting them be in the moment, and you, I like what you said about having that, maybe that internal progression of skills or standards, kind of, that's your job.
And, yeah.
And then to be ready to push that question in or to probe or ask that question, and not just quiz right now.
It's not just quiz.
What shape is this? What
I like you said that. Yeah. I'm going to use that next week or in 2 weeks. They also, if someone goes, oh, well, that is, and they say something that is nothing in our kindergarten standards. Mm-hmm. It's negative numbers. Mm-hmm. Well, I still will honor that and say, you know what? That is fourth grade. You know, yes, there are other numbers on the number line. We're probably not going to do that right here. But yes, you're right. The number line goes the other way. And mm-hmm. And to honor that, because also as a third grade teacher, you know, it's really cute to call this shape a diamond for years and years. We call it a diamond. Books call it a diamond. Mm-hmm. When they get to third grade, it's a rhombus and they're tested on a rhombus. Mm-hmm. And then I go to them. I said, is rhombus too hard for a kindergartner to say? And some of them look at me like, and I'm like, no, it's not too hard for them to say. I was like, so why can't we use the mathematical term for that shape?
Mm-hmm. Or at least the and, right?
It's
called diamond, rhombus. But also,
yes,
it's called a rhombus.
We call it a rhombus in math. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so just having them, and even if in kindergarten, I know they're not tested on rhombus, it's not whatever. I don't want to limit and put anyone in that box.
Yeah. And to be fair, diamond is just as abstract. Like, they don't have practice with diamonds everywhere, right? Like,
it's just that it's in baseball. I mean, culturally we call it a diamond.
Yes. And, but like a kindergartner has no more frame of reference for diamonds in their regular life.
No. And actually I took a thing at NCTM a long time ago and it was math chance and something. And so I will never forget a rhombus as a square that got hit by a bus. Mm-hmm. And so the attributes of a rhombus are actually equal lateral sides, but not right angles or mm-hmm. whatever. So,
yeah. And certainly kindergartners would remember that. Like,
yeah,
that right. Time, right.
If I had a picture of a rhombus with a bus right here. Yeah. Yeah.
So this last section of our interview is a bit of the what and how that goes into Tracy's courses. We have undergraduate students who want to teach in that K-3 grade band or who will work with young children somehow in their professional capacity. And they have homework that includes working with K-3 children on a regular basis. And it's that full circle moment. Tracy gets a more accurate picture of how her students are doing by watching them practice these skills. These undergrads get the benefit of real practice and Tracy's reflections and conversations with them afterward. And that group of children get to play customized games and activities that are catered to them.
Mention that they actually have a focal child that they work with. And so some students have family members they can easily access, some nanny, some work in daycares and child care centers, but some don't have access to kids. And so I run into the issue of I don't have anyone to work with. So the lab, the folks in the lab have been generous in terms of planning and the families. And so I have a play group that meets on some Wednesdays between classes. It's pretty hectic, but my students bring their activities. So yesterday we met and right after the preschool lets out, the kiddos come and we're in the multipurpose room and my students brought their literacy activities to sit and play with the kids. And then I also have my assessment class folks who don't have kids to work with coming in and taking notes and observing. And so I'm hoping at some point they can talk with each other. Yes. I don't know how to get there yet. It's all kind of unfolding as we go. But I get the chance to watch my students within that play group incorporate what we're doing in class in the moment, which is nice. Because a lot of times reading the reflection is never as much as right. like actually seeing it. And
they get a chance to really try out their activities on mm-hmm. real kids in a safe environment.
This conversation about play has taken us for 2 weeks of interviews on Teach Wonder. And like we said at the beginning of this episode, if you haven't listened to the episode prior, you really should. We talked about the nature of play, its tenets, why it matters, and our team will be coming back soon with some exciting news of our own on our work with play. But at the beginning of episode one, I asked you to consider the lens that your life has created for you, the lens through which you see teaching and learning. And I invite you to do what Tracy and her students are doing, to do what our team has been doing during this podcast and our own work. Add some of this information to your own lens. See your daily life and your work with students or your children through this lens of play. We'd love to hear your thoughts and experiences. Email us at cese@cmich.edu if you'd like to share. And as always, links are in the show notes. This has been another episode of Teach Wonder.